The Nick Handley Show.
Ron hates Mondays. Hell, I'm not crazy about them either. I also don't like Tuesdays, Wednesdays, or Thursdays.
AM 590, ESPN Omaha.
All right, so you can still do your voting, the 2020 AM 590 TV show binge bracket, which I believe we just got through the last region, the TV region. Is that correct? I believe so. I think we're completely through the first round. Yes, today marked the end of the first round of voting on the bracket. So we will be going forward with those Sweet 16 matchups. You can take a look on Twitter at AM590 ESPN Radio. And by the way, the craziest thing was that play-in game with Beverly Hills 90210 and Grey's Anatomy. That came down to a 50% split. Somehow, though, I don't know how, Beverly Hills 90210 got the nod for the play-in. Now, unfortunately, they lost to Breaking Bad. But that was, I don't know how that happened. TJ, I had nothing to do with that.
I thought maybe you heard the rumor was a coin flip.
Yeah, we were, but Twitter decided for us.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
They gave him the check mark. So that one moved on in the play-in. That was as close as it got. Everything else was pretty decisive winners from what I can see. Now, I don't have it pulled up in front of me right now, but boy, I was looking at that 12-5 matchup of House of Cards. Taking on House of Cards was a 12 seed taking on The Sopranos. Oh, I'm sorry, that was a 14-3 matchup. I got to say, I took House of Cards. I liked Sopranos. I really did. But House of Cards, I got into that one, even with kind of the weird and ickiness of one Kevin Spacey. By the way, he continues to release those statements as Francis Underwood. Like, when it comes to, like, he did it, remember he did it on Thanksgiving last year with the allegations of sexual assault with a young bartender. And so he was addressing the allegations as Frank Underwood. He did another one where he, I think it was right around the same time, right on Thanksgiving this year, that he also put out another video as one Francis Underwood.
Well, here was another close one. Cheers against Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Cheers was a 3 seed. Fresh Prince was 14 seed. Cheers, 51.5%.
Dang.
So that was close.
I knew that one would be. I knew that would be. So Fresh Prince almost pulls off the upset. Did we get any major upsets? I don't think we did. I think for the most part, it was pretty much chalk. I thought House of Cards was going to have a better shot. I really did. Now, the problem with House of Cards, the final season was just not as good. And you did have Kevin Spacey not there anymore. It was different. Jenna from Forrest Gump, who is Mrs. Underwood, Claire Underwood. It just wasn't as good. And this is not a whole like, oh, you're just against a female being a president. No, that had nothing to do with it. It didn't have the same kind of like drama that it did with all of the scandal around Frank Underwood. So,
yeah, and I've seen many major upsets. I mean, some 12s over some 5s, but my fans say tournament, that happens a lot.
Well, yeah. 12 over 5, let's see, what do we get? Modern Family beat Murphy Brown. I believe. True Blood over Lost. The other 12. Flintstones and Dragon Ball Z. I voted Flintstones.
Yeah, that one won pretty big.
Yep. It was a generational thing.
Oh, for sure.
My peeps. My peeps. Let's see. What was the other 12-5 in the TV bracket?
You got 1 hour left.
Friday Night Lights, Mad Men. Who won that one? I didn't see that one.
Mad Men? I'll have to look. There is a chance out here for 15 to beat a 2. DuckTales is only about six points behind against the 2-seed Batman for the animated bracket.
And again, that one's kind of generational as well. It is. Yeah, Friday Night Lights, did they survive as a 12? That was a tough
matchup.
They
did, yeah. They got 64% of the vote.
They took down Mad Men. How about that? Coach Taylor, the Dillon Panthers. I loved Mad Men, for the record. I thought it was great. From start to finish, it's just one of those that you have to be committed to because the preceding episode might have nothing to do with the previous. But make no mistake, like episode one, just to use as an example, going into episode two, there might be some familiarity from the previous one, but it probably will go off on its own. But then in episode six, something from episode one will all of a sudden come back. Like, oh, yeah. So once you kind of realize it's not necessarily chronological, or maybe that is not even the best way to describe it. It's just all over the place. But everything that happens in each episode is relevant throughout the seasons. It's just not always in order. But it's very good. It's very good. You just have to be committed to it. And it kind of takes a while to get going. But once it gets going, you're in. You're hooked.
Another close one we had was a 7-10 matchup. Community got 52% of the vote against The Good Place, the 7 seed. So Community, the 10 seed, moved on. Then we had a couple 11s over 6s. House, MD, the 11 seed, beat the 6 seed, The Wire.
Boo!
Which I know a lot of people like.
Boo!
I haven't seen either of those shows. House got 64% of the votes.
I just don't like Dr. House. He's a jerk.
And then American Horror Story was 11 seed. They got 56% of the vote to beat the 6 seed, Smallville.
I voted for American Horror Story. I picked that upset. That's the one thing I miss right now. With
Yuri chimes in. There were some absolutely horrible wins on this bracket.
There was. There probably was. Although Friday Night Lights over Mad Men, I was torn on that one, but I had to go with my heart, and my heart was clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. The Dillon Panthers, Friday Night Lights. Like, I still watch that. So the shows that I continue to go back on, even though I've seen them umpteen times, The Office,
Seinfeld,
Parks and Rec, and Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
I've seen them all. I've seen every episode.
Yeah, I would say those on three. For me, it would also be Community and New Girl.
New Girl, I think I've still missed a good chunk of the early part, but I have seen the last three seasons in their entirety, including the finale. And we just actually watched the finale, gosh, a week ago. So my wife and I, we have our, if we're watching TV while we're eating, it's usually something that we've seen before. If we're beginning a new show, we make sure we're not eating. We're giving it our full attention.
Yeah,
and some of those new shows, you don't necessarily want to be eating. Depending on the show that you're watching, you don't necessarily want to be eating because it might be something gross. We were watching, I was telling you that The Sinner, which is now in its third season, like there's some pretty disgusting stuff.
Is that a like Netflix, Hulu original?
It's Hulu. Yeah, Hulu
original. Okay.
The first season, was Jessica Biel was in it. And then the second one, I don't know if you'd recognize anybody from that one. The third one.
Oh, so it's a new cast every season?
Except
kind of like True Detective?
Except the detective. The detective is the same in every one.
Okay.
But there's always like a new villain and kind of like a new case. It's very good. I do recommend it, but it's got some gore to it depending on the season. And then we started watching this new one just recently, and I feel bad because I didn't bring it up the other day. And we just started watching it here just recently, and that is it's called Hunters. And it's got Al Pacino, and basically the premise of it is they are hunting Nazis living in the United States. Takes place, I want to say I can't decide if it's late 70s, and I'm sure at one point it said the year. It's like late 70s or early 80s. It's not in the 80s generation of what made Stranger Things so popular with the soundtrack. So I think it's late 70s. Yes, in fact, it is. It's 77 is when it's going on. But it's very good so far. But it also has, it's got some It's got some goriness to it. It's got some raunch to it as well. But it's definitely, I think we're through three episodes right now, and it's good. So, couple to add there.
Yeah, hey, just going to pass along, I saw that head coach Scott Frost is going to be on Sports Nightly at 6:25 tonight.
Tonight's okay. Out of quarantine, and I'm assuming he's going to be on the phone. I wouldn't think he's... Well, as far as I know, you know, the guys have been doing the show from their own homes, too. Between Ben and Greg and Nate, so, yeah.
And you know how you asked Doug Woodard earlier, WS head basketball coach, just about kind of this recent uptick, it seems like, in Division I talent here in the state? Well, the guy, the five-star, first ever in the state, Hunter Salas, mm-hmm. the offers continue to roll in this yeah. time. He just got an offer from UCLA.
UCLA to add to it. And we're talking major, like, legitimate basketball programs, Blue Bloods. You know, on the
Kansas.
Right, everybody. Yeah, Kansas.
Gonzaga.
Did I hear North Carolina?
Boy, I can't say for certain, but I wouldn't be surprised.
And I know that they're hopeful that you could see a offer from possibly Duke as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, the center, if you wanted to, do you remember Bill Pullman?
Yeah.
Okay, Bill Pullman is the main detective, so he's the guy that's always around.
President, Independence
yes,
Day.
Yes, there you go. Independence Day president. Yeah, he's been in a lot. So, yeah, it's a good one. I would check it out. You got to start with the first app or first season. But it's not like any of them necessarily. Well, if you watch the second one, you're going to be totally in the dark because they're all different crimes. So, as far as Bill Pullman's journey during this, though, there's some stuff from previous seasons, but it'd be fine. It's pretty good. So a really cool article out there at the Omaha World Herald written by Evan Bland about the impact of not having spring practice and what it means to college football. We don't know. I mean, I know we all assume, and I feel very confident that we will have an uninterrupted college football season. I feel good about that. I don't know that 100% certainty, though. None of us do. But we hope that will happen. More importantly, though, how college football will be affected with a lot of these programs. I would say, probably almost all of them at least had some interruption of their spring practice, if not all. Nebraska only got two spring practices in. I know Texas was supposed to start today. So everybody's going to kind of feel the pinch on that. How would that affect college football? We're in wait and see. But Evan reached out to former Huskers. A lot of notable names, too, on how they feel it would have affected them. It's a great read. It's some really good insight. We're going to talk to Evan about that coming up next here on AM 590. Again, kind of a bizarre story we'll get to here in a little bit involving Trevor Lawrence trying to raise money for people impacted from COVID-19. Guess who's trying to interrupt that? Yeah, you probably don't need... If I gave you two guesses, I feel you're going to get it right. But anyway, we'll get to that here in a moment. I mentioned really cool write-up in the Omaha World Herald on the impact for former Huskers not having the spring reps. And that was written by one Evan Bland. He joins us on the AM 590 hotline. And Evan, I know reaching out to former Huskers, boy, we don't know what the impact will look like because, first of all, we have no idea when practice might be able to resume. I know Bill Moose talked about, you know, maybe in June they could get 13 of those practices in, and then you'd kind of be running right alongside fall camp starting in late July and August. But as far as reaching out to former Huskers and getting their insight on how that would affect them, what did you take away from their response?
Yeah, it was interesting because I thought the goal going into it was to articulate what exactly Nebraska and every other major college football program is losing with the spring. You know, it's easy to say, oh, they're losing the reps or they're not getting a chance to learn the offense. But I felt like talking with some of those guys, you really started to get a better picture of just what some of those springs meant to them. I mean, there were entire careers that could have changed if a guy didn't have a spring to make a move. You know, I think of talking with Tanner Farmer, who graduated a couple of years ago on the O-line and said, man, March of 2016, he, as far as the depth chart was concerned, he was on the scout team, mm-hmm. and he worked his way up and became a starter that fall to begin the season because of the work that he put in the spring. And it's, you know, it's not even that these guys necessarily came into the spring ready to go, but, you know, they got in there, they threw those 15 practices, maybe started stacking experience. Maybe some of these guys rebuilt their bodies and just kind of needed to feel that out, what that was like. Some guys need the reps. And it's just, it's really interesting to kind of hear them kind of talk through the what ifs of their career. You know, Joe Gans, the quarterback in the mid 2000s, had a couple interesting takes. He said that spring of 06, when Zach Taylor was the guy and he knew he was the backup, that was an important time for him to start kind of showing his teammates what he was made of, to show the coaches that he could play and that he was tough, and that when actual football was occurring, he was a guy who did not wilt, you know. And then he would say, he gave the example in 08 when he was the established starter going in. He said, man, if I didn't have that year, I wouldn't have been nearly the leader that I was in the fall. I wouldn't have known what made guys tick. I wouldn't have known how to inspire guys, what would turn them off, what their preferences were.
Yeah.
So that was important for him as a quarterback. So it's just depending, you know, there's a whole wide range of players at different points in their career. You know, ultimately, those spring times are really important because it's a low pressure situation. There's not the cost of a winning a game or losing a game. It's just a chance to start feeling things out. And that's something that Nebraska and every other major college team's going to miss out on this year.
Yeah. Was there one in particular, one element that maybe surprised you with the response as far as, okay, wow, I didn't think that this would actually be as big of an issue, but you did have a player say that, whether it was the overall, you know, physical part of it, whether, as you kind of pointed out too, sort of the ability to kind of develop leadership skills too. Was there something in particular that maybe you weren't expecting going in?
Well, you know, I think what was interesting to me was talking with Rich Fisher, who was an assistant at Nebraska in the early 2010s. And what he said from a coaching perspective was fascinating. And I think we kind of knew it, but to hear it articulated was interesting, that the spring is when you experiment. Like, that's when you try to decide, hey, is player X, you know, better here or is he better there? You know, he gave the example of Jamal Turner when he was there. He came in as a receiver. They thought, well, let's see if we can try him in some quarterback packages. And they ultimately decided, we're going to keep him where he is. And it worked out fine. But, you know, Spencer Long was another example. Started on the defensive side of the ball, moved to offense, and is enjoying, you know, a career in the NFL. More recently, you think of guys like Cam Jurgens, who was hurt last spring as he made that transition from tight end to center. And you could tell that learning curve kind of caught up with him a little bit as the season started. And then, you know, again, this year's group, I think you just got a feel for some of those guys. Like Javon Wright was supposed to be transitioning right now from defensive back to outside linebacker. You know, Chris Hickman was moving from tight end to wide receiver. You have guys like Brant Banks and Ethan Piper who are promising O-line prospects, but they came to Nebraska as defensive linemen. So this was supposed to be that time when those guys were moving around, when coaches were deciding what they could handle, what their rosters might look like. And so the effects of that are just going to get pushed back into the summer, to where if Nebraska has a chance to get some organized summer workouts in, it's going to be a really important time for evaluation from coaches. And if they don't, then suddenly fall camp becomes kind of this mix of, you know, what can we, you know, where can we move these guys, as well as, hey, we need to prepare for the season that's right upon us here. So I think that's really interesting. It cuts down on that evaluation time, that experimentation time, and really kind of forces coaches to make a decision without seeing everything in front of them.
Evan, I know the one thing we've talked about a lot, and hearing Bill Moose's comments last week on Husker Sports Network about if they could potentially get the remaining 13 practices, say, completed in June, you would most likely see a month separation between the conclusion of spring practices and the start of fall camp. Typically in June and during the summer workouts, coaches do not have any contact. Could that, in your opinion, be an advantage for the coaching staff to not only see these guys so fresh in the summer, but really serving as their spring practice, but also you talk about other guys that could potentially be a part of spring that were not early enrollees, that maybe that gives them a little bit more ability to maximize their rep opportunities?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Xavier Betts, Omar Manning were guys that we're talking about wouldn't be able to come in until fall camp. And so maybe they can jump in and get a chance. And, you know, you got to feel for those early enrollees who were here. That was another aspect of kind of feeling that out. I mean, there were seven true freshmen who had graduated early, had obviously had the foresight to finish their credits and to graduate early, and they all had to go home. You know, they did not get the benefit of those reps. And we've heard Scott Frost say before, if you can come early in the spring and get those reps, that might double your chances to play as a freshman. So that's a blow. And then you consider too with Nebraska, I mean, they didn't get the 15 practices for a bowl. They got in two unpadded practices before, you know, these measures came in, and they had to halt everything. So yeah, I mean, if you're Nebraska, you want to absolutely take every advantage you can to get some practices, because if you, you know, if you're not able to get the guts in, you could be, you know, as many as 28 practices behind some teams that made a bowl a year before. I mean, that's a ton of development and figuring out what you have. So absolutely. I mean, Nebraska has a lot of, you know, I think interesting pieces that they don't really know necessarily where they're going to fit yet on offense and defense. And again, those practices are where you need those. And if you don't have those into fall camp, you're in trouble. Now, I don't think you want to stack those right before fall camp and have a situation where you're, you know, practicing 30 times before a 4-month season. But yeah, I think the summer would be your ideal situation. And if that doesn't happen at this point, man, it's going to be a really condensed, really newsy fall camp, I think.
Yeah. Evan Bland joining us from the Omaha World Herald. I also think, and honestly, Evan, I don't know which way to go on this. I think of guys who did have some off-season surgeries, whether it was more, you know, minor repairs or anything major, that they were probably going to be limited in the spring, but there were going to be some reps to kind of keep them fresh. Obviously, we all think of Adrian Martinez. I don't know if this helps him or hurts him. Again, if there is an opportunity to get back in June and complete spring, that maybe that could be beneficial for a guy like Adrian, or if that actually hurts him, because maybe you do want that recovery period after putting some work in the spring and then having the summer to kind of recover, get into, you know, the weight program a little bit more, but also be ready to go in the fall. I'm not sure which way you'd be leaning on that.
No, that's a great point, because you can absolutely make a strong argument either way. You know, on the one hand, he was not going to have a lot of receivers to throw to this spring, right? I mean, he had four scholarship players here. That would have been kind of difficult to make an evaluation in that sense. As you mentioned, coming off that surgery to his non-throwing shoulder, mm-hmm. he was going to be limited. So how was that going to affect things? So you just don't really know how much stock to put into that. But I think on the other hand, you know, again, it hurts you too, because you know, you're not able to develop that leadership. I guess that'd be the same side of the argument. You're not able to develop that leadership. And I think Joe Gans spoke of that to me, where, again, it's that camaraderie aspect. Even if you're not out there taking the reps, you're building that trust, that rapport with your teammates.
Yeah.
So, you know, you miss out on that. But again, on the other hand, if this thing plays out in June and Nebraska's able to get those practices in, then maybe Martinez is throwing to Xavier Betts and Omar Manning and Alante Brown and some of those other guys, and able to go that way. You know, I honestly feel for a guy like Luke McCaffrey, who this was supposed to be his spring to state his case. You know, even with Martinez limited or not, he was going to get a lot of reps, a long look at the job. And, you know, as Scott Frost hinted a couple weeks ago, if he ended up maybe not as the starter, you start looking to where he might be able to contribute elsewhere within the offense. And so, you know, what does that do for a guy like him, who this was supposed to be his time? Once you get into fall camp, you really don't want to be auditioning, I don't think, in that. You really want to be starting to find your role. So you got to feel for him there too. But, you know, I think with Adrian, it's interesting because he's a guy who it doesn't seem like maybe needs the physical reps. He doesn't maybe need the mental reps, even as a 2-year starter who's been going through this a bit. And you're right. It'll be really interesting to see what they think and how he feels like missing the spring did. Maybe it helped him or hurt him. It'll be interesting to see.
Evan, when you were also talking to some former players, it didn't seem like there was this major concern that you're kind of going into fall camp or even the actual season itself overly rusty. Did that kind of surprise you, or you know, was it just more about the reps and kind of having that spaced out the way that a typical spring to fall camp usually is?
Yeah, I mean, I think the theme I got from the players was it really depends on what point you are in your career. Like, you know, they pretty much echoed this sentiment that if you are an early enrollee or if you redshirted last year, which, you know, we haven't mentioned that, the 2019 class redshirted all but three of their scholarship players. Yeah. You know, that's a time to learn the offense. That's a time to adjust to the speed of college football. You know, if you're a redshirt freshman or redshirt sophomore, the kind of sentiment there was, man, this is your time to make a move. And maybe if you had some offseason injury or you remade your body, this was the time to adjust to that. And then if you're a senior or an upperclassman with an established role, then this is your chance to, you know, establish yourself as a leader, mm-hmm. to, you know, help other guys along, kind of continue that tradition, whatever it might be. So, and then again, you factor in how guys learn. You know, Rich Fisher said Quincy Enunwa was a guy who needed the reps. Like, he could see it, but he needed to go out and feel it. You know, other guys could study it, or maybe the physical reps weren't as important. So there's so many factors that go into it and so many what ifs that can kind of come out of missing a spring like this that, you know, it's kind of mind boggling, but the bottom line is you just can't get better. You can't develop if you don't have the chance to go out there and show what you can do.
Evan Bland with the Omaha World Herald. Again, if you haven't given it a read yet, check it out at Omaha World Herald, omaha.com, about the players, former Husker players, coaches, how not having a spring would have affected them. Evan, good stuff as always, man. Hope you're doing well, staying healthy, and, well, I'm hoping we're going to be talking about something actually happening in front of us sooner rather than later, my friend.
That'd be amazing, man. I wish my bracket was busted right now.
Exactly. Yes. I would give anything to complain about how awful I was at picking teams. Those little things that normally aggravate us, I think we all miss that. Absolutely.
Amen.
All right. We'll see you, man.
Thanks.
Evan Bland, Omaha World Herald. Yeah, that's so true. You know what else? This was brought up by Scott Van Pelt, and I could not agree more. When, not if, but when we get back to sports. Any of us ever going to complain about a Thursday night Jacksonville versus Tennessee matchup again? You know, those really awful Thursday night matchups that you would get every now and then. Tennessee's pretty good now, but, you know, the ones that are less appealing, like a Jacksonville, I don't know, Atlanta matchup. I for one, will not complain about that at all. And like Evan said, too, I would have no problem getting on the air right now telling you how terrible I was at picking my actual NCAA tournament bracket. I won't complain.
Just give it time. It'll happen.
It will. Absolutely. All right. Story from the New York Post. Trevor Lawrence trying to do something good amidst the COVID-19 virus outbreak. And yes, the NCAA was running interference to this. We'll explain next. It's a good thing that TJ's the voice of reason when it comes to matters of the NCAA. I had read this from first reporting. This was Grace Rayner that I saw this on Twitter. Grace Rayner, who covers Clemson for The Athletic. And I had seen just something random. It said NCAA statement regarding Clemson. I'm like, okay, what the heck am I reading here? What's going on? And so then after reading more of some of her tweets with something regarding Clemson, I learned that this was about Trevor Lawrence. And the subject of this is Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend, Marissa Mowry, who plays soccer at Anderson University, were attempting to start a GoFundMe page to raise money for coronavirus victims and their families. But wouldn't you believe if I told you that the page was shut down the same day it was launched after Clemson's compliance department asked Lawrence to be in compliance with NCAA rules? And so The Athletic was reporting on this. The NCAA, as we all know, forbids using an athlete's name, image, and likeness for crowdfunding. And a Clemson official confirmed the story to The Athletic, After the page was taken down, Yahoo Sports reported the NCAA will allow university discretion on charities that support the community during this crisis. The response to Grace Rayner on this story from the NCAA stated that they did not tell Trevor Lawrence to take down his fundraiser for the COVID-19 patients and their families. We continue to work with member schools so they have the flexibility to ensure that student athletes and communities impacted by this illness are, are supported, and we applaud Trevor for his efforts. It remains unclear right now if Clemson will continue to allow Trevor Lawrence to reinstate the page. Now, just so you know, Lawrence and his girlfriend had raised $2,670 before this page was shut down. They were going to donate the money to Meals on Wheels America and No Kid Hungry. They said this on their Instagram. They are now, at least for the time being, unless they're able to continue this, they are instead are going to send letters to people who have been directly affected by COVID-19 or those who are helping to fight in the medical field. Which, first of all, let's address the main point. Good for you, Trevor Lawrence, and good for you, Marissa Mowry. That is awesome. Obviously, this is where using your name and likeness is such a positive thing in a time like this. It's awesome. We've talked about it so many times in Nebraska, kind of being on the forefront of working with an actual group to help further the awareness when it comes to social media and being able to use your name, image, and likeness. It's something that is coming to collegiate athletics. And during a time like this, you would think, boy, this is a no-brainer. This is a student-athlete, very well-known quarterback in college football. His girlfriend, I don't know the soccer community, but Marissa Mowry plays at Anderson University. Also a student-athlete trying to use her name, image, and likeness for a tremendous cause. Because a lot of this, we would say, is usually self-gratifying when it comes to name, image, likeness. And when I say self-gratifying, I'm saying, well, I want that money that the university is getting by using my name, image, and likeness. So I want a piece of that pie. That's not what Trevor Lawrence and Marissa Mowry are doing. What they're trying to do is use their name, image, and likeness to help out people during this time. And so the NCAA compliance kicks in. Now, I don't know if this is more of a Clemson issue. And I can understand Clemson saying, ooh, we know technically you're not supposed to do this. Let's shut this down until we talk to the NCAA about it. And TJ, call me a cynic. Call me a skeptic. But I wouldn't be shocked if the NCAA is like, no, you can't do this. And all of a sudden, there was a huge response of people saying, are you freaking kidding me? And they backed away and said, oh, no, we never said that. And now they're kind of putting it on Clemson. No, we said it's the university's discretion during this time. So now it's like, all right, we're putting Clemson in the crosshairs, not the NCAA. I'm sorry, this might be exactly how it went down. But if you're asking me who I trust more, Clemson or the NCAA, I'm going to side with Clemson and say they were probably acting in response to what the NCAA was telling them to do. Now, hopefully, this story and the NCAA's public stance on this now that they're out in public saying that they will allow university discretion on charities that support the community during this crisis, now that that's their official stance on this, not only will other student-athletes, both male and female athletes, be able to use their name, image, and likeness for something like this, like Trevor Lawrence and Marissa Mowry are doing, but also universities will say, absolutely, we encourage you to do that. Because guess what? In a couple of years, student-athletes that don't currently or are not currently enrolled, or student athletes that will not be at those universities when the name, image, likeness goes through, they will be able to set a tone of, hey, name, image, likeness is not just about me getting a piece of the pie. It can also be about me using my status and my overall visibility for a good cause. I hope this encourages other student athletes to take the cue from Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend Marissa Mowry, because this is awesome. And even if it was a bit of an embarrassing moment for either Clemson or the NCAA, it seems like they're all on the same page now that they will encourage and allow their student athletes to, whether it's GoFundMe, have certain types of charity causes to help victims and people in the medical field battling the coronavirus. I can't think of a better way to use your name, image, and likeness right now.
Yeah, I applaud Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend for what they're doing. I guess having watched this all unfolded on Twitter for the last hour, I guess I kind of, for face value for what I see, I think the NCAA is telling the truth. So all of a sudden people just start believing, oh, the NCAA, they're the worst.
And that's me. I'm always that guy. And I'm the first to say, well, it's got to be the NCAA.
And people like to do that too. And then all of a sudden the NCAA comes back with a statement saying, no, this wasn't us. I even saw a reporter say, hey, no, this was Clemson's compliance staff that did this. And, you know, Clemson's compliance staff's not immune to making mistakes as well.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden the NCAA workers, their Twitter account, they're all tweeting at like USA Today and Complex Sports, all these like going way out of their way to say like, no, this is not accurate. You need to update this. Here's our statement. So I guess this time I tend to believe the NCAA here on this one. It's a better PR. I mean, it's not a great PR day, but it's better than what like the Philadelphia 76ers had, where they said they're not going to pay all their arena workers anymore. Mm-hmm. And then Joel Embiid donates $500,000 to those workers. And then they do a 1A. It's like, oh, okay, we'll still pay them through the end of the season.
Right. And that's all it takes is sort of one element to that story to sort of step up. And then you realize how bad you look. And they're like, oh, no, the whole time we were all about this. It's like, were you really, though? That's why, again, I'm a skeptic in nature when it comes to anything involving the NCAA, that it's very easy for me to think that they went to Clemson and said, nope, you got to shut this down. Then all of a sudden people are like, whoa, 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 why are you shutting that down? They're using their name, image, likeness for a good cause. And this is terrible. How could you not allow somebody to do this? They're trying to help. You are awful. And then they're like, whoa, it's public backlash. It's not good. All right, we got to come out with a strong statement saying, no, we encourage this. It was the school. Well, and I'm assuming, think if you're a compliance officer at any university, you're going to do what Clemson did because you don't know if the NCAA is actually allowing student athletes to do that. So in an attempt to try to save the eligibility of your student athlete, especially a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who's kind of important to you, you're going to make sure that that person is in compliance, and then you're going to ask the NCAA. Maybe that's exactly what happened. To me, that would make sense for Clemson to shut it down because they knew that technically that was against what the NCAA was allowing student athletes to do. And hopefully, as they said, hey, we got a young man and his girlfriend. They're both student athletes. They're trying to raise money for this cause. Is that acceptable? And hopefully the NCAA said, yes, we are allowing university discretion on these types of charity attempts to support their community during the COVID-19 crisis. I hope, TJ, that's exactly how it went down. But as soon as he saw this thing get shut down, it was easy to think, oh, boy, here's the NCAA waving that finger again saying, nope, nope, nope. So either way, the silver lining on this whole story is it sounds like Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend Marissa Mowry, who's a soccer player at Anderson University, are going to be allowed to continue the GoFundMe page. And again, awesome, awesome job by these two student athletes. Hopefully it will encourage more student athletes to attempt similar charity efforts. Great stuff there. All right, we'll tell you what's on tap as we wrap things up next. Big thanks to our guests today, including Greg Smith of HailVarsity.com. Bellevue West head basketball coach Doug Woodard. Big congrats, by the way, to the T-Birds, Class A state champs. Also, our Takeout Tonight segment with Buffalo Wings and Rings owner Sean Verchotiki. Lincoln R. Neal of the Omaha World Herald. Travis Manners of Athletes Training Center and our rehab report. And Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. you missed any of the show, check out the podcast, AM590ESPNRadio.com. Great American Takeout Day continuing to go on. And a great place to go is AM590ESPNRadio.com to see how you can help your local bars and restaurants that are still giving you takeout, curbside service. Go right to AM590ESPNRadio.com and click on the Open for Business page. It's right there, right on the front as you go to AM590ESPNRadio.com. You can't miss it. Great opportunity for you to see how you can still patronize your local bars and restaurants here in the area. And also, if you see one that's not on the list, please get in touch with us. You can hit me up, email Nick at AM590ESPNRadio.com. And again, cannot encourage you enough to please get out there and patronize your local businesses as best as you possibly can. Going to the DJ's Dugout inbox, our guy Pender J says, as I'm sitting home working today, I had Rocky IV on. I'm watching the fight at the end and wondering to myself, what if they had played the song from the Karate Kid 1 montage during the fight? TJ, do you know the song he's referring to?
You're the best around?
Yes!
Heck yeah.
From Joe Esposito. Not a bad idea.
That is it.
Because you could never take away the Rocky IV montage song, the training montage song, which is Hearts on Fire. Hearts on Fire, Strong Desire. Yeah, it was good. I'm not doing it any justice. It's very good, though. But yeah, You're the Best Around, Joe Esposito. It might just be called You're the Best. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. That song works in really any environment where you're just trying to achieve greatness. Oh, it's cheesy, man. It's so cheesy. But it's so awesome. So, yeah, Pender J, I'm with you. Like, that's, to me, a song that you could implant in any movie during an epic competition scene. Heck, they could have even did it in The Good, the Bad, and the Hungry, 30 for 30, between Kobayashi and Joey Joss Chestnut. Because we know that Joey Joss Chestnut is the best around.
It's true.
Kobayashi had his moment. I think he got a little too glam, though. Got a little sidetracked from the training. You always got a younger, hungrier version of you on their way up.
That's right.
Speaking of which, good 30 for 30.
That is. Chestnut the goat.
Yes. What's on tap, by the way? I'm going to continue to watch Hunters.
Okay.
I'm going to stay involved in that. Last night before I went to bed, I tuned into 42-1, the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson 30 for 30. And for whatever reason, TJ, I got to start watching this at an earlier hour. I keep falling asleep or dozing off right as the fight's about to start. It's the best part of it, the buildup to one of the greatest upsets in all of sports, definitely in the boxing world. But it is a very good 30 for 30. What are you into tonight?
Tonight, I'm going to watch 1917 again. Today was his first day in Redbox. You can go and get it. I don't know how that movie didn't win Best Movie of the Year.
So you've seen this movie already?
Yeah, I saw it like a week before it finally went out of theaters.
Okay.
Highly recommend 1917. Yeah. It's amazing.
I think I definitely want to see that as well. All right, Sports Nightly coming up. And as TJ mentioned, Scott Frost will be on the program right around 6:25. You can hear it right here on AM 590. For TJ, I'm Nick. You've been listening to The Nick Hanley Show, AM 590 ESPN Omaha. Good night, everyone.